I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly, battling the blazes. The death toll rises in California as firefighters attempt to gain control of the disastrous wildfires. We have the latest. Courtroom history. President-elect Donald Trump is sentenced in his hush money trial just days before his return to the White House. The clock is ticking. The Supreme Court takes up a challenge on whether to ban the popular social media app TikTok. Plus, the Sound of Music. A family in California displays a message of faith and hope amid the devastation of the wildfires. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, the wildfires near Los Angeles take a deadly toll. At least 10 people so far have been killed by the smoke and flames that consumed entire neighborhoods. President Joe Biden canceled his trip to Italy and the Vatican so that he could monitor the developments. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, Vice President Kamala Harris also canceled a foreign trip. She joined the president in a wildfire briefing today here at the White House. The administration says it's going to keep helping even after the fires are put out.
Helicopters drop water on the wildfires, trying to keep them from spreading. But many buildings already burned. Palisades Elementary Charter School reduced to rubble. About 10,000 homes also gone.
I just drove by my house just to get some closure, and yeah, it's rubble. There's nothing there. My daughter, who was born there, and she's 23 now, and said, Dad, get something, just pick up something. And there's literally nothing.
I have nothing. I can't even teach, and I'm a first responder. I teach people to save lives, and I couldn't even save my house.
Before and after images show piles of ash where houses once stood. Firefighters say their efforts were made far more difficult by strong winds.
What we saw in the first couple of days of this fire was something like I have never seen. It was 60, 70 miles an hour, and we were just chasing our tail, trying to get people out of the way so we wouldn't lose any lives.
President Joe Biden assembled a team of officials at the White House to monitor the federal response to the wildfires.
The scope, the scale, and the erratic movements of these fires is truly unprecedented.
And FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell spoke at today's White House press briefing.
Recovery from these fires is going to be complex. I've seen many disasters throughout my 4 years in this role. This is certainly one of the worst that I have seen.
And President Biden praised firefighters who've been working around the clock to rescue people, evacuate neighborhoods, and put those fires out. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Okay, thank you, Owen. As the fires ravaged homes in California, one family decided to turn to Our Lady when they found out their house was destroyed.
Regina Celi, laetare, alleluia, laetare.
Beautiful voices right there. Peter and Jackie Halpin, alongside their six adult children, found almost nothing left of their house following the fire. They said a prayer next to an intact statue of the Virgin Mary and then began singing Regina Celi. Members of the family say they have given everything to God through this difficult time and felt so much healing to be at the site of the house together. And joining us now is Andrew Halpin, one of the children of Peter and Jackie who lost their home in one of those wildfires. Andrew, we are so sorry for all that you're going through, and you're in our thoughts and our prayers right now. First off, how are you and your family doing?
Well, hi, Tracy. It's good to be here with you. Everyone in our family is safe and alive, and so we're very grateful for that. It's definitely a difficult time for my parents and for my sister and her child, who also lived with them. But, you know, we've had such an outpouring of support from our community and our friends that it's definitely showing the blessings around us today.
That's wonderful. I know you've lived there for a while. Have you ever experienced anything quite like these wildfires?
Nothing quite like these. You know, growing up a few times, you'll see a blaze on the mountain, or you know, there's always the California wildfire season that we're all pretty accustomed to. But something to come through our neighborhood so fast and so intense. No, that's there's never been anything like that in my lifetime.
Mm. Andrew, were you able to gather any belongings? I mean, did you have enough time to do anything like that?
Only the smallest of knickknacks that did happen to survive. You know, most everything was destroyed. My mother is the family genealogist, and she has been collecting records and antique photos for 40 years, and it's all ash. You know, we found one of those Franciscan teacups with the apples. That's, my mother had a collection of those, many of them 40, 50 years old. We found one. Most of her jewelry, including some antique jewelry from her mother and her grandmother, that's gone, that's somewhere in the ash. All that was really that survived was that statue of Our Lady of Guadalupe and a statue of St. Joseph in another area of the yard, which led to our song that you saw there.
Yeah, and that's unbelievable. Your voices are so beautiful. Your Catholic faith is so important to you. Talk to us more about that, at that moment when you guys were singing.
Well, before we started singing and before that video started, we started with a prayer that's a consecration to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And that's something that we've been praying as a family for as long as I can remember. And I remember thinking in those moments, wanting to be strong for my parents. My parents are very strong people, but when you lose your home, it was very raw for them. And when we started singing, I remember it felt like I didn't have to be strong anymore because we were being strong for each other.
Yeah, I tell you, it was so moving, too, for all of us that heard it. How were you feeling during that time?
I'm sorry, during what time?
When you all were singing the Regina Caeli together. It was such a beautiful moment. How did that feel, singing as a family?
It felt like we were where we were supposed to be. It felt right. It was an incredibly healing experience to be able to grieve together and then take that grief and just give it back to Christ and to his mother.
So beautiful, Andrew.
And
such a beautiful moment. And thank you so much for coming on. We're praying for all of you. Anything else that you want our audience to know?
Only that you know, the fires are still going and many, many people are suffering. And you know, we are so grateful for all the support and the love that we've received from our community. And I would just like to remind everybody to keep praying and to make sure to show your support to the other people of our community who are still suffering and have lost their homes as well.
Absolutely. Andrew, thank you so much. God bless you. And we're praying for you all.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
All the deadly wildfires are also testing California's efforts to stabilize its insurance marketplace. This after many insurers stopped issuing residential policies because of the high risk of fire. In recent years, hundreds of thousands of homeowners in the Golden State have struggled to find fire insurance. The recent blazes could make coverage more expensive and even harder to find. Last year, for instance, State Farm discontinued coverage for more than 70,000 homes and apartments in California. All right, let's bring in Raymond Tippmann, managing partner at Tippmann Wex, a insurance law firm that advises on a wide range of claims. Raymond, great to be with you today. And again, we are so sorry for everything you all are going through in California right now. We mentioned the tens of thousands of people who lost their homes or their home or renter's insurance prior to these wildfires. Can you tell us why State Farm and other insurance agencies canceled those policies in the first place and talk about this insurance crisis in California?
Yeah, even before these fires, it was terrible. I think the commissioner of insurance said that estimated 7 out of 12 major insurers were leaving the state or canceling policies. And that was even before these fires. I think the estimated losses, according to AccuWeather, their preliminary estimates was $52 to $57 billion in losses. And between 20 and 50% of that would go to insurance. And just yesterday, they updated that estimate to $135 billion to $150 billion. So it was a major crisis before these fires. And because they've hit the most expensive parts of the state, it's a significant problem. You know, I just don't know how people are going to find insurance or how it's going to be affordable. In terms of why that's happening, I mean, I think there's three main reasons. So the first one is there's a California Proposition 103 that was passed several years ago that require insurance companies to be approved for any rate increases. And the Department of Insurance here in California just wasn't approving rate increases. They were either slow playing those requests or not approving them at all or approving very small amounts. And so insurance companies were just at the end of the day losing money to do business in California. And so as much as you would like to keep rates down, ironically, they're not able to charge as much as they need to make money and to do business in the state, which I think leads to reason number two, which is just everything you do in California is insanely expensive, whether it's materials, whether it's labor, it's regulations. Trying to build anything in California just costs way more than it should. And so you don't see this happening in other states that have fires, that have hurricanes, that have floods. But it's a problem in California because of how expensive it is to do any business in the state.
Yeah, we're almost out of time, but Raymond, I'm sorry, I got to jump in here real quick. I want to ask you a question. For those people who maybe had their insurance policies canceled, maybe they weren't able to get insurance after that. I don't know if that's the case for everyone in California, but what happens to them? I mean, if they lost their home, and we see a lot of these homes are just devastated.
Yeah, I mean, there is an insurance of last resort called the FAIR Plan, but it's about three times more expensive than your average insurance policy. In the famous zip code 90210 in Beverly Hills, I think the average cost of insurance is $10,000 a year. And so it becomes unaffordable in a state that already is very unaffordable.
Mm. Well, so much more we can talk about. We have to leave it right there. Raymond, thank you so much for talking to us about all this. We appreciate it. God bless. All right, now to the president-elect. He is receiving messages from world leaders, including from Russia. The Kremlin says Russia is always open to dialogue with world leaders, including President-elect Donald Trump. The Kremlin also says that face-to-face talks would come with no preconditions. Trump said yesterday that a meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin is being arranged. Well, today, in a New York courtroom, history was made. A judge formally sentenced Donald Trump, a former president and now president-elect, in his hush money case.
This court has determined that the only lawful sentence that permits entry of a judgment of conviction without encroaching upon the highest office in the land is an unconditional discharge.
This has been a very terrible experience. I think it's been a tremendous setback for New York and the New York court system. But the fact is that I'm totally innocent. I did nothing wrong.
Trump appeared virtually for the hearing with his attorney. The sentence of unconditional discharge means that he will not get prison time or any other penalties, but he does carry the conviction on his record. Trump is set to become the first U.S. president to take office with a criminal conviction. Trump says that he will appeal the sentencing. And in another hit for the president-elect, a federal appeals court has denied the request to block the release of the special counsel's final report on its Trump probes. It details Jack Smith's two investigations into Trump, one for the ex-president's efforts to overturn the 2020 election and one for Trump's alleged withholding of classified documents. Right now, a lower court ruling remains in place, which delays the release by 3 days. Meanwhile, at the U.S. Supreme Court, it was a clash between national security and free speech, and at the center of it all was the popular app TikTok. The app is owned by the Chinese company ByteDance. In April, Congress passed a law requiring the company to sell TikTok by January 19th. If they did not, then the app would be banned in the U.S. The law passed with broad bipartisan support, and today it seemed the judges favored the law, meaning the clock could be ticking for the smartphone app. And joining us now is attorney Jeff Lewis, a First Amendment attorney. Jeff, good to be with you today. We appreciate it. First, your take on today's opening arguments. What struck you the most?
It was not a good day for TikTok. What struck me the most is there were four votes to take this case up by the Supreme Court. I was ready to hear four justices saying things and asking questions, suggesting they're going to strike down this law. I didn't hear that today.
Yeah, just let's talk about this potential national security threat and the argument there. Talk to us more about that.
Yeah, in First Amendment jurisprudence, National security or national defense is usually trumps the First Amendment. Usually that is a way to support government censoring of speech. But in this case, there's a little question about whether or not China has ever actually asked TikTok to actually spread disinformation. So there is a little bit of uncertainty on this question of national security.
Yeah, and I know that Chief Justice John Roberts was doubtful that this was a First Amendment issue, saying that Congress didn't care what was expressed on TikTok, but only who owned it. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, if I could summarize the questions of the justices on that point today, it would be, this isn't a free speech case. This is a who owns TikTok case. It's not regulating the content of what you say. It's regulating who owns TikTok.
Yeah. In his first administration, President Trump, as we know, was against TikTok. However, now he's asking the Supreme Court to delay ruling until he takes office on January 20th so he can reach a, quote, political solution. How do you think this will play out?
That suggestion didn't get much airtime today in terms of the questions by the justices. But here's the reality. The president, through his subordinates, enforces the laws of the United States of America. And so how I see this playing out is if this law is upheld by the Supreme Court, Trump could choose for a time to not enforce the law and give himself time to make a deal to resolve this case.
Yeah. And remind us again, before we let you go, January 19th is getting closer and that's the deadline. What exactly will happen then?
Well, that's a big question. You know, TikTok's lawyer said the app goes dark on the 19th. I don't know if that's the case, but certainly companies that do business with TikTok and support the app will be putting themselves in legal peril on January 19th if the ownership hasn't changed for the app.
All right. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for weighing in, for your insights. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including Fight for the Unborn. Republican lawmakers on Capitol Hill introduced the first pro-life bill of the new Congress. Plus, everybody, freeze. Don't move, because we're about to tell you where winter weather is causing some major headaches. First pro-life bill of the 119th Congress will be the Born Alive Survivors Protection Act. The measure would protect babies who survive an abortion. Several pro-life Republican senators are leading the effort to get the bill through. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now in the studio with more. Eric.
Well, good evening, Tracy. With Republicans now controlling the U.S. Senate, GOP members believe that they can finally get this pro-life measure across the finish line. It will need 60 votes to pass, which means several Democrats need to jump on board. But Senate Majority Leader John Thune says possibly as soon as next week, the Senate will vote on the bill.
This vote will ask Democrats to answer whether a living baby born after an attempted abortion should be provided with medical care or be left to die. It shouldn't be a hard question.
Congresswoman Ann Wagner authored the House version, and she says that she's committed to getting it passed.
As a cradle Catholic and as someone who believes very deeply, this is a duty that I have and one that I'm going to see through. I am going to make sure that the Born Alive bill is not just passed, but is signed into law.
The Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act would build on legislation passed by Congress in 2002 when the Born Alive Infants Protection Act passed. This bill would further clarify that any baby born alive as a result of an attempted abortion must be given reasonable care and transported immediately to a hospital. Senator Roger Marshall, an obstetrician, says for any doctor, this shouldn't be political.
I don't know what type of doctor who took an oath when a baby is born alive that they just put him in a room in a closet to die or worse than that.
House Democratic leadership continues to say they will vote against the measure.
Defending freedom, including a woman's freedom to make her own reproductive health care decisions, and contrast that vision with the extreme MAGA Republican plan to criminalize abortion care, impose a nationwide ban, limit access to IVF and contraception.
It is important to note that the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops is in full support of the bill. In a statement, the bishops wrote, "The Church teaches us that human life must be respected and protected absolutely from the moment of conception." Tracy.
All right. Thank you so much, Eric. Good to see you. Well, news residents are on high alert as another blast of winter storms sweeps across the southern United States. Heavy snowfall and icy conditions have forced schools to close and canceled flights in Arkansas. Expected totals range from 6 to 9 inches. And to help stranded motorists, officials mobilized the National Guard. States like Louisiana and Mississippi saw a wintry mix of sleet and snow and ice. All right, now to Venezuela, where President Nicolas Maduro has been sworn in to serve a contested third term.
Lo juro por mi vida, y así cumpliré, y cumpliremos, lo juro.
During his speech, Maduro accused the U.S. and his opponents of trying to turn his inauguration into a world war. Reports say 10 heads of state attended the ceremony, but far more governments around the world rejected his victory, saying there is credible evidence that his opponent won by a landslide. Well, this comes as the Biden administration says that 600,000 Venezuelans and more than 200,000 people from El Salvador can legally remain in the United States for 18 more months. The Department of Homeland Security cited the political unrest in Venezuela. The TPS program faces an uncertain future under President-elect Donald Trump's presidency. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, including remembering a friend 2 years after the death of Cardinal George Pell, we sit down with the author of his new biography. Plus, Pope Francis meets with a unique group of kids, why he calls them witnesses of hope. Is out on the late Cardinal George Pell. 2 years after his sudden death, he remains a topic of interest and respect. EWTN senior Vatican analyst Frank Rocha recently sat down with the author and why she wrote a much longer version of her 2002 book on Cardinal Pell.
2 years after the death of Cardinal George Pell, are we getting a clearer idea of his legacy for the Church?
I believe so, Francis. It's actually 2 years ago today, exactly. The 10th of January 2023. Yes, I think it's clear that the financial reforms he put in place are slowly but surely making a difference. His legacy he left to the Church in Australia is very clear. It's going strongly. The universities he established, the reforms he made to education, for example, which was very close to his heart. The seminaries are strong, they're getting large numbers, and they've largely followed the ground rules, if you like, that he laid down, and it's a pretty positive legacy, really.
Your biography is entitled Pax Invictus. Would you say something about that as the theme of your book and of the last two decades of Cardinal Pell's life?
Well, yes, I think it's appropriate. He sometimes used military analogies. He thought the Church had a battle on its hands for the hearts and souls of people, and peace to the victor. And despite all the muck that was thrown at him, he died a contented, free man whose reputation was restored by the High Court of Australia. The title comes from a war memorial in Melbourne that he liked very much when he was the Archbishop there. He used to walk past this war memorial. It was on a statue outside an Anglican church. And then when he moved to Sydney, he had a statue of an unknown soldier brought up into the body of St Mary's Cathedral. And he put the term Pax Invictus on that statue. So a dear friend of his suggested it would be a good subtitle, and I was very happy to use it.
So would you say even 2 years after his death, does he remain in some sense a leader of the conservative or traditional part of the Church?
He would say orthodox. He always emphasized that what he was teaching wasn't George Pell's teaching or George Pell's interpretation of the faith. It was the Catholic faith. And I think people will increasingly look to his writings, especially his prison journals, which he had a lot of time to think about when he was writing them. And I think people will draw strength from those writings, yes.
You think his prison journals, 3 volumes, will be his major literary legacy?
Probably, yes. He wrote several other books. I edited a couple of them, and they were collections of his sermons and his newspaper columns. But I think those prison journals were written under such extraordinary circumstances.
Tess Livingston, thank you so much for joining us to talk about your new biography of Cardinal George Pell, Pax Invictus, from Ignatius Press. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Francis.
Finally, tonight, Pope Francis got to brighten the day of some pediatric cancer patients who visited the Vatican. The children were on a pilgrimage from Poland where they are receiving treatment. The Holy Father said the patients are witnesses of hope because he is sure that Jesus is present in them. He additionally praised their bravery and said that he felt a joy in his heart as he met them. Beautiful. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.